I had to make sure that in honor of a woman who writes an article called Gin and Tonic, or a recap, I have a gin and tonic in front of me.
As you should. At 10 o'clock in the morning.
I made a promise with myself that I would always keep the conceit of the show, which is we're sitting in a bar having a conversation.
You do work for yourself. You can do that.
Hey there. Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, where the art of conversation is back in business. Now pull up a chair next to Dee Fish. He's a speaker, author, business coach, basically all-around professional talker. And he's chatting with some of today's top entrepreneurs, authors, artists, executives, you name it. They might discuss business technology or what's playing on their headphones. Who knows where the conversation will take them? So grab a glass and join us on Beer, Beats, and Business.
Before you get frustrated or down on yourself or upset about something, see if you can find the good in it, because it makes a world of difference when you look at life that way.
Super simple and super powerful. That was Jeannie Dietrich. She's kind of a big deal in the PR world. She's the founder and CEO of Armen Dietrich and the lead blogger over at Spin Sucks. In a business that's known for being less than straightforward, Jeannie is a no BS person, and I knew we'd have a great conversation about what PR really is. You're gonna love it. And I thought this conversation would be the perfect capstone for season two. And that was my subtle way of saying, we finished season two. Thank you so much for joining us these past episodes. We've already started production on season three, and it's gonna be bigger, better, and more awesomer. Yeah, I said it. And if you'd like to help us with the show, we'd love to have your support. Please join us over at Patreon and become a regular. Your support would mean the world to us. And you can find that at patreon.com/B3. And my name, as you know, is David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. Except for my mom and my wife, because that would be a little weird. I'm a speaker, author, business coach, and one of my favorite jobs is to be your host on Beer, Beats, and Business. So let's get it going. Jeannie, how are you today?
I am well, sir. How are you?
You know, I think people are probably getting sick of me saying it, but I am living the dream.
I imagine you are up there in Evanston.
You know, it's not a bad place to be.
No, it's not.
As long as I'm on this side of the fence of the cemetery. As people know, I live next door to a cemetery, and I say, hey, if I'm on this side
You're
of the fence...
On the north side.
Life is good. So here's my question for you. You are not only a PR professional, but you are an awesome, experienced, been in the business a while PR professional.
I am not. I've been in the business for like 2 years. Older than I am.
You mean when you turned 23? That's when
right.
You started? That's when you started? Okay, 2 years ago. I love it. Why do people often view PR professionals about one step above used car salesmen?
Oh my gosh, it's driving me crazy. I think if you had to ask people the worst, least ethical, least honest jobs, it would be used car salesman, attorney, and PR people. Yeah.
I think you're right.
I think I'm right.
Where do you think that stems from? Is it the past, and that there was a lot of, you know, inauthenticity or you know, unethicalness, as you said, or is it still happening? Like, is it inherent in being PR, or is there something bigger going on?
I think it's attributed to two things. One, the PR industry has done a horrible job of doing its own PR.
Okay.
For organizations specifically, business leaders don't understand what PR is or what it can do for an organization. And so they sort of think it's this black magic that happens. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it's terrible. So I think that's one reason. And I think the other reason is you have politics and Hollywood mixed in there. And, you know, you have your press secretary or your publicist who may or may not tell the truth to get you out of things, or they've taught their, candidate or their celebrity to what's called block and bridge. So you block the question and you bridge it to your message so that you're not actually answering the question. And I think we all get sort of tired of that, that, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. You'll see it with politicians all the time.
Where absolutely.
Well, I'm not going to talk about that, but what I can tell you about is this. And the interviewer is very frustrated because we need to hear about this. And so I think it's those two reasons. I think the PR industry just has done a terrible job of doing its own PR. And then in those two industries, politics and Hollywood, you definitely have some unethical behaviors.
Sure. And it's interesting because then I even think about, you know, Hollywood, I actually even think about their portrayal of PR
right.
in yep. television shows yep. and in movies. And you always have like the PR person who's like following around the politician, let's say, or the business person going, okay, well, how are we going to spin this? Right. Yep. You know, yep. how are we going to, you know, be, whether it's unethical or how are we going to just make this, you know, this turd smell good. Right.
Right.
Which is interesting because I'll actually plug your book for you because it's a great book. You wrote a book called Spin Sucks, and you have a great website, which maybe has some awesome guest bloggers, me, but...
Not maybe, does.
Yeah, I do. All right. So when you say Spin Sucks, what does that mean to you? Like, so do you think that you can be in PR and not spin? Is PR inherent in spin or is spin inherent in PR? Like, I guess, what do you see as the ideal? I've asked you 9 questions. Go.
Yes. So I'll start with this. When you tell somebody, you know, if you're sitting next to somebody on a plane or you meet them at a cocktail reception or whatever it happens to be, and you say that you're in PR, you get one of 2 responses. You either get, oh, you're a spin doctor. Or, oh, you lie for a living.
Okay. That's awful.
No. And people say that. You're like, no, I don't. So again, the perception, right, is horrible. And so the whole idea of Spin Sucks is to change that perception. And it's a big, lofty vision. And I don't know if it'll ever happen in my lifetime, but it certainly is what we're trying to achieve. And it's really about educating business leaders on the right way to do things. And, you know, I'll give you a really good example. We have a client who's been a client forever, and he can call me at, you know, at 6:30 at night and say, we're about to go down on such and such in one of the states that we're in, and I need your help. And we, you know, I mean, we have such a great relationship that there doesn't have to be a lot of time or effort put into something. He can just call and say, I need your help
sure.
on this. And it goes right. But he called me one time and he said, I'm having trouble in one of the states that we're in, and I know that you have some former journalists on your staff. Could you have somebody call the governor's office and pretend they're still with the paper there and talk to, you know, threaten them that there's going to be a story? And I was like, no. And he goes, why? And I'm like, well, first of all, it's a lie. And secondly, what happens if we get caught? Well, we won't get caught because you'll have spun it by then. Like, no, see, that's not how it works. But I think what was interesting to me is, and because I have such a good relationship with him, I was able to say, you're a moron and that
right.
you can't do that. Right. But it led to a really interesting conversation where he said, but I thought that that's the way things were done. And so again, it goes to the perception that people have of the industry. No, we can't pretend that we're a journalist with the Chicago Tribune and call the governor's office and threaten to write a story. We can't do that.
Right. Well, and it makes me even think, if people think that there's a certain way it's done, it almost lets them go down a bad path.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
It enables them like that. I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong, that this client's not an unethical
person. Not at all.
Person.
Not at all.
They're just like, oh, that's the game. So is that what we do?
Right.
Well, so in that case, so like if you're kind of advocating for, let's just call it ethical PR. I don't think that's, you know, I think you'd argue that PR doesn't need to have the adjective ethical in front of it. It just should be there inherent.
Right.
But
right.
If you're talking to a group, let's say of PR people, or, you know, we've got a lot of, you know, kind of small business owners and entrepreneurs and salespeople, all kinds of people listening to this show. You know, PR actually matters for all of us, right?
Yes,
even individually.
Yes. Yep.
Like, what would you advocate ethical PR is? Like, how would you tell somebody just to approach putting their message out there?
Well, I think it's 2 things. The first is that PR is not just getting your message out there. It needs to be more strategic. And actually on September 1st, I wrote a blog post about this because people, small business owners, entrepreneurs, everybody tends to start with the tactics with PR. So they'll say, well, what media contacts do you have? Or how can I get my message out there? Or, you know, they start with the tactic versus where most marketing disciplines, you start with the strategy. And so changing that mindset, it's more about the strategy and can PR help you achieve your business goals? And sometimes it is going to be with messaging and media relations and, you know, events and things like that. That's more what I'll call traditional PR. And sometimes it's going to be with a more integrated model where you're taking Facebook advertising and content marketing and, you know, blogging and media relations and social media, and you're integrating it into a larger program so that you're out there doing all of those things versus can you just call the New York Times and get me in their CEO corner column.
Right. Well, I love what you just said, because that definitely mirrors a lot of what I talk about in my little neck of the woods as far as networking, because everybody thinks about networking and relationship building and sales the same way. Like, what are the tactics I have?
Right.
Versus going, well, why don't you think for a second about what you're trying to do? And then actually start drawing some connections between that and the tools that you have available to you. So that makes perfect sense. So that actually kind of brings me to another question. I know you've done this for longer than 2 years. I think it's three years now, right?
At least 3 years.
3 years. Well, at least 3 years. So, I mean, I can imagine that in the PR world, technology is definitely... This is a field where technology has had a huge impact, right? Because maybe 20 years ago, it literally was, you had your newspapers and maybe your television station in your neighborhood, and that was it. You know, you had to connect with journalists. You couldn't go directly to people like you can these days.
Right.
Broad, open-ended question. What do you think has been some of the big or even the biggest impact on technology on the PR world?
Well, it certainly has turned the industry upside down, which I love because it needed to happen. But, you know, when you go back to thinking about ethical PR, that has made it happen. Because as you well know, if you're not transparent today, there are people who live in their mom's basements drinking Dr. Pepper and eating Cheetos all day who will figure out that you've said or done something, right? Like, you've not been consistent and they will find out. So I think technology from that perspective has really changed the way that organizations and business leaders have to message to their publics, because it's all about transparency and it's all about authenticity. And if you haven't been consistent, or you have tried to spin the truth, or you're going after your competitor, you will be found out, and it's not going to be pretty when you do, when that happens.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think we're definitely seeing that in politics in this day and age, right? Where, you know, a politician will say, well, I never said that. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, somebody puts up, well, here, you know, and a lot of the comedy shows are famous for this. Here's the clip of you from C-SPAN saying exactly what you said, you never said.
Right.
And it's interesting, because it's almost like a lot of the world hasn't caught on to that, or maybe it's just like the generation that didn't grow up with that level of scrutiny. It still thinks it can get away with, you know, BSing. And you're like, dude, the emperor has no clothes. We can see it.
Right.
That being said, with people having so much access to information these days, we're getting bombarded by PR, right? Whether it's intentional PR or unintentional, right? Because we're getting messages from people.
Yep.
If you were just a general person, you're a lay person, you're out there in the world, what advice would you give to that person about how to digest information intelligently?
Oh,
sorry, that might be a book right there, but but I think that's what's really important about it, right?
Yeah.
Because I've read a number of books on PR for myself personally, obviously, in building my businesses, but it's also because I think it's important to know how other people are influencing you, right? And what they're trying to make you do, which is not always ethical. So any thoughts, any tips on like ways that you can be kind of an intelligent, informed consumer of information?
Yes. I think the biggest thing that we need to do as individuals is always remember to check sources before we share anything, because I think that's what leads to the critical thinking skills are sort of missing right now. A perfect example of this is when Steven Spielberg posed in front of a dinosaur, and then the meme went across the internet with people freaking out that he had killed this large animal. It's a freaking dinosaur, people. It's a dinosaur. So like, critical thinking skills are not apparent right now in our world.
I love, there's a meme that I actually have shared. And this is old, but it was like, you can't believe it's a quote. You can't believe everything you read on the internet. And it's attributed to Abraham Lincoln.
Right. Exactly. That's a great example. A great example.
And it's actually very interesting to me, just, when I, not that I'm in the business of quotes, but I definitely, see a lot of them, and I'm in the personal development world. So everybody's got their great quotes. And I love seeing all of the different quotes attributed to different people, right? Like, I mean, they're great quotes, but you're like, I've seen this attributed now to Gandhi, to Wayne Dyer, to Tony Robbins, to President Obama.
Yeah. Let's just check before we share. Let's use our critical thinking skills.
Why do you think people don't? You said we have a dearth of that right now, and I agree. But why do you think that is?
I think it's a couple of things. I think one is that we're so busy that we're just like pinging stuff off as fast as we can without it really thinking. How often do people just read headlines and not? My favorite is when people will respond to a tweet that I've posted without reading the blog post that goes along with it. And you're like, you read the blog post? Because clearly you haven't.
Right.
So I think it's that. But I also think that we tend to share things that we agree with. And so if it's something that we agree with or that we think is funny or whatever it happens to be, we share it without thinking about it because it supports our thinking.
Well, they've done the studies in, behavioral science and behavioral economics that you're exactly right. We share what we agree with because it makes us like, it has to be right because we agree with it.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. Yes.
And it's interesting how quickly wrong things get passed along. If I'm sitting here going, I want to be better at not making the world, full of muck. Any tips or tricks on how to do that? Anything that you do? To like kind of like, because we're all human, right? It's like almost like a knee-jerk reaction, like I gotta share that because that's right, or that guy is horrible and this proves it.
One of the things I do is always, I'm by nature I'm very cynical, so it helps, but I always look at that, like somebody posted something the other day, I don't remember what it was, and I was like, there is no way that is true. And everyone's going, yeah, it's true. And of course it wasn't true, but it was something that I can't remember what it was. It was something that people really wanted to believe was true about he who shall not be named.
Right.
It was something. And I was like, that's just too, I know he goes off the edge a little bit, but that's just too far-fetched. And it turned out it wasn't correct. So I think it's having a healthy dose of cynicism in everything that you see. And, there are plenty of places that you can check for news stuff. Make sure that the traditional media, CNN and the New York Times and Fox and everybody else is talking about it. Or go to Snopes and check that stuff. There's plenty of things that you can do to check to make sure that what you're sharing is true.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I do is I actually will sometimes, and it's definitely on my kind of my Google phone. The suggested articles are sometimes from websites that definitely don't follow the, my normal belief system. But I actually don't delete them because I want to be like, well, what are the other people saying?
Right.
A lot of times I'll be like, oh, that's crazy. And then I'm like, well, is it okay? Or maybe I'm working on my next book. And, I just recently wrote a paragraph because in my world, there's this argument against social selling, like social media for sales and kind of old school, just you got a cold call and hustle, there's these two camps. And I actually wrote a sentence. I'm like, if there's a controversial issue and both sides are very passionate about it, the truth is probably in the middle.
In the middle, yep.
Like, yep. So kind of like you said, just be healthy with your cynicism and go, you know, don't be too skeptical too often, but sometimes go, well, prove it. Whatever this is, prove it.
Right. Yes, totally agree. I think we all have to be just better about those kinds of things.
Okay. I like it. I like it. So, I could talk, politics and PR with you, 'cause I can definitely see that that's where we're going, and we could spend way too long on it. So I'm going to completely switch gears on you.
All right.
You have described your musical tastes as that of a 13-year-old girl.
Uh-huh.
I want to know what that is. I want to know just, I mean, is that good? Is that bad? So that's the question I'm going to ask. But before we get to the answer, I want everybody who's listening to know that they are listening to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, D Fish. If you want to reach out to me, would love to chat with you. Ask me a question. Tell me what you think of the shows. Tell me how awesome you think Jeannie is, whatever it is. You can find me on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And obviously, we'd love if you'd rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us get found in the very overwhelming world of information that we live in. So we really appreciate that. And my guest today, who's been rocking, this is Jeannie Dietrich. She is the founder and CEO of Arment Dietrich, an integrated marketing communications firm. She is also the author of Spin Sucks, which is a great book, co-author of Marketing in the Round, co-host of Inside PR. She doesn't sleep much. She also is a blogger, the lead blogger at Spin Sucks, which is a great website on PR. And by the way, she didn't ask me to do this. I'm going to recommend this. Even if you're not in PR, just some fantastic information about how to kind of approach information in our day and age. So I've gotten a lot out of it, even though I'm not in PR. So Jeannie, you're welcome. How can people find out more about you?
Spinsucks.com is the best place. I am there every day.
Awesome. Awesome. Comment on articles there, and Jeannie will either agree with you or disagree with you.
Or push some buttons. Or
exactly. Wait, you push people's buttons? Weird.
No, not me.
I can't see that at all. All right. So speaking of pushing buttons, you might push some of mine. So you like the music that a 13-year-old girl would like. What does that mean? Talk to me.
Well, I kind of wear this badge with pride, because if I didn't, it would be really humiliating. You know, I like Taylor Swift and One Direction, and I love One Direction. You know.
Who's your favorite?
Harry, of course.
Okay. All right. The story of my life, I give the love. I spend her love until she's broke inside. I honestly don't know any of their music. But for whatever reason, I know that people are very passionate about their favorite member.
Yes.
So, okay.
True story. Yeah. Right. I mean, I definitely have I think it's because we didn't have a television growing up. And when I was 14, my parents bought me a boombox, which was my first ever. Ooh. But I had to share it with my younger brother, and my younger brother is bigger than I am. So I never saw the boombox.
Okay.
So anything, television, radio, anything like that from my childhood completely escapes me. And so I think I'm catching up now.
Okay. It's
so I'm about 13 years old right now.
So I kind of feel it's like, you know, the person who got married very young and then, you know, they got divorced later on, and now all of a sudden they're like going to frat parties
right,
you know, because
exactly right.
All right.
Exactly where I am.
So I'll forgive you your love of pop music. That's okay. What's really interesting to me is, and I'm not a big pop music fan, but, and
this does not surprise me,
but what's really interesting these days, I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff out there, but like you mentioned, for example, Taylor Swift, her music's actually very good, right? We've learned how to craft really good music.
Right.
And she's got the best people crafting her music.
Right.
And so like you listen to it and you're like, wow, that's catchy. And wow, that's really well produced. And you know, it's not dumb people making this music. I think, you know, I teach Zumba. Our listeners definitely do. So like I listen to a lot of like bad pop music, you know, dance music. And I'm always just like, wow, it's so well done. It's annoying as heck because it's an earworm.
Right.
But it's in there and it gets in there. And I get that. I was listening. There's a song that came out that was Jennifer Lopez and Prince Royce, who is a big bachata artist. And I actually really enjoy a lot of his kind of original bachata stuff.
Yeah.
But now he's trying to get bigger. So the way they do that is they come to the United States and they just go club.
Yep.
Like, right. And there's this song and it's him and Jennifer Lopez. And it's a total pop song. It's not that bad. You kind of dig it. But I found the secret for me is I listened to it in Spanish because then I don't realize how vapid it is. Because then I listened to the English translation. I'm like, oh my God, this is so stupid.
Oh my gosh, oh my God.
And there's all the, and my fiance laughs at me because there's all this Spanish pop music or, you know, Spanish language pop music that I'll enjoy. I'm using it for Zumba and I'll kind of, you know, I get down to it. And what I can't do is listen to the translations or find them online because then I realize how dumb they are.
Right. Yeah.
And so it just makes me feel better. I'm just like, I'm just going
to
enjoy the overproduced.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I know some Spanish, but not enough to like, you know, follow along. So I'm like, perfect. Ignorance can be bliss.
That's awesome. Zumba. I should come take a Zumba class.
You know what? Would love to have you. It's hilarious. I mean, I realize I've been doing this for years now.
Have you?
Like, I've been probably teaching for... Gosh, four years, 5 years.
I love it.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, wait, I'm actually an experienced teacher. How the hell did that happen?
Right?
Oh my gosh. But it's still a blast. It's so much fun. And you know, I figure I got to work out. So I might as well,
true.
You know, I gotta stay engaged. And it's the music too. I really do love Latin beats and I love salsa music and all that kind of stuff because I've actually taken like classes that are they're like dance aerobics classes, but not Latin music based. Yeah. And I can't handle them. I'm just like, oh, the music sucks. Let me go.
I imagine though that Latin music would work better for that anyway.
Well, yeah, you put all these different syncopated beats in there and yeah, it totally works. So do you, this is an interesting segue, but I know the way that you get your exercise is not on the Zumba floor usually.
Correct.
You're on a bicycle.
I am. That is true.
So tell me about this. I actually don't know. So I'm kind of curious. All I know is that you talk about being on your trainer all winter and watching television.
Which, as you aptly pointed out, is about 10 months out of the year.
Right. It's a lot of television.
It's a lot of television. It's a lot of time on a trainer.
Tell me about cycling. Like what do you do? Like,
well, I used to run marathons, tons and tons of marathons. And
okay. Cause you're insane. Great.
Cause I'm insane. Correct. And although, you know, when I moved to Chicago 15 years ago, it was a great way to meet people. Great. I mean, some of the people that I met those first years just running are still really good friends today. So
cool.
Yeah, I get really bad exercise-induced asthma, and it was killing me.
Ooh.
Killing me. And the doctor finally said, yeah, I'd had a couple of knee surgeries as well. He was like, don't you?
Oh, and my knees didn't work anymore. So, yeah, okay.
Like, don't you think you should find something else to do? And I was like, So I went out and bought myself a road bike, just a, you know, it was like $1,500 road bike. Which I've upgraded since then.
Oh, look at you being all fancy.
And taught myself how to ride, you know, clipped in and all that. And then I would say 6 years ago, I joined a team.
Ooh.
And that first year got my butt kicked from here to, oh, it was horrible. It was so bad that I don't know why I kept going because... I mean, I just got my butt handed to me.
Well, based on the fact that you kept running lots of marathons, even after knee injuries, you apparently like pain and suffering. So that makes sense that you got humiliated and kept going.
Yeah. So I just kept working really hard at it. And what I discovered is that if I rode all winter, most people who ride in Chicago don't ride all winter. And so the first probably 6 weeks out when the cycling season begins, it's really painful for them. And I discovered that I had an edge up on them because I was riding all winter.
So, look at you bringing strategy to all parts of your life.
So
what kind of riding do you do? Like, what kind of racing is this?
So I was doing, until 3 years ago, I was doing crits. I was doing the Velodrome, which is the big circle track, which is awesome. I've done tons of centuries, and I did lots of time trials.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we used to, in downtown Evanston, my real only experience with cycle racing was in Evanston for a couple of years, they had a Grand Prix, which was like road racing. Did you ever do that?
I did it once.
That's insane. That's a good thing you didn't, because I was watching. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, they're taking these turns, because what they did is they basically just blocked off downtown Evanston and were like, we're going to make a course out of it. And they're like, okay. And they're like taking the turn at like 30 miles per hour. There's like a pack of 50 people. And you're like,
yeah.
When I saw somebody spin out and go into the barrier next to the street and not stand up right away, and then they brought the ambulance, I'm like, that's not a good sport.
Well, have you ever watched the tour? I mean,
you know, I have off and on. I've never gotten into it deep, but I mean, and that's usually when you do watch, they just show you kind of like the leaders.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just chugging along, but I can imagine there's a mess in the back.
50 or 60 miles an hour. On a bike.
That's like, part of me goes, man, that's amazing and courageous and impressive. And maybe this is my advancing age coming up, because, you know, I'm coming to a big birthday, 25. part of me's just like, are you insane? Like,
it's so fun though. It's so fun. Yes. I mean, I never had a broken bone in my body until I started cycling. my pelvis, I've had 3 concussions. Like,
My gosh.
So much fun though, and the adrenaline you get from it, and the endorphins, and it's my zen, and it's my shrink, and I can go out there and I can think. It's the only time I have to myself that I can actually just think. It's amazing. I love it.
I get that. I do actually. I don't get the adrenaline part, but the thinking. Like, I also swim a lot.
Yeah.
And a big thing is just, you're right, it's you in the pool and nobody can bother you, and you just back and forth. So
yeah.
I get it. So I'm gonna leave the daredeviling to you.
Okay, fine.
You know, I have never actually had a broken bone, so apparently I'm gonna stay far away from cycling.
Well, I'll knock on wood for you.
Yeah, thank you. No, I'm not. Yeah, and the idea of having a broken pelvis just sounds awful. So
it wasn't bad.
Well, these hips got to shake, so I can't mess with these.
Those hips do have to shake.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think shaking hips is always a good place to end any conversation. So I always ask my guests the same question at the end of the show. If you could give someone a tip to make today a little bit better, what would your tip be?
You know, Laura, who I work with, whom you've met, has been a really good influence on me, because I mentioned that I'm very cynical by nature, and she can find the good in everything. And so that is the advice that I would give to anybody, is see, before you get frustrated or down on yourself or upset about something, see if you can find the good in it, because it makes a world of difference when you look at life that way.
Perfect. Jeannie, thanks so much for being on today.
Thanks for having me.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
These early morning ones, there's more tonic than gin, for sure.
As there should be, yeah, because you might have to take a nap at the end or something.
Well, what would be bad about that?
Fair. That's a fair point.